Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Hey.
Laura, welcome back.
Thank you.
Glad to see you. I'm sorry to hear about everything you've been going through.
Well, it's all good now. So, but thank
I'm
you.
I'm so happy to hear that. I'm happy to hear that. Laura had to step off for a bit with some health concerns. She's okay now, which is great. She will be joining us again, which is awesome. And also, we have with us today a new member here, Alex. Alex, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? I'm just going to preface a few things for all of you. Alex is the guy who runs all of my YouTube ads. So if any of you saw any of my YouTube ads and brought you here, you can thank him for his giftedness and his manipulative powers to convince you to work with me. So anyway, that's Alex. And he looks like a Viking, but is in fact not a Viking.
What?
Yeah, I know. He's Estonian, though. And so Estonia, okay. Probably, there's a connection to Viking bloodlines, I'm certain. So
there is indeed. There is indeed. How's it going, guys?
I love it. I love it.
How's it going? Yes. Yeah, so I run a small
Game of Thrones company. Guy.
Sorry?
It's like Game of Thrones guy.
Everybody gives him the Game of Thrones guy, and then literally, but what's the Viking guy name? What's his name?
Ragnar.
Ragnar.
Yes, Ragnar.
So, anyway, and before we jump in, I just want to find out: are you guys able to see my aura behind me?
We can see your aura.
Okay, good. Is it a happy aura? So you guys are all psychic. You're able to read it. Because I've been messing around. I got to do these. I'm going to start doing LinkedIn lives every week. And I wanted to have like a background that was a little more interesting than just a white wall. So I'm trying lighting.
Try going pink. Pink on video looks better.
Okay. See, he's the expert. I'm going to see though, if everybody agrees. Is that better, everybody?
More saintly.
Oh, yes.
More saintly.
nobody has an opinion. I see it. Well, in any case, we're going with
this. Good. No, I like it.
Hey, thanks, better. All right, great. Thank you for that. Okay, so Alex, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit? You've got a collection of people on this call who have varying levels of. Actually, I think everybody right now, a number of people aren't able to make the call today. Summer being what it is. But I'm pretty sure everybody else is a business owner. Laura is not a business owner, correct?
Sort of.
You're going to become a business owner.
Yeah, I'm sort of a lapsed business owner. Okay. But yeah, I'm here about my day job, basically.
Very good. Very good. Awesome. Well, okay. So Alex, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us why you're here, what you're hoping to get. And then we can actually start with you today, if you want.
Sure. Yeah, no problem. Alex, as you guys know, own an advertising agency called Lynx Digital. So we do a fairly small company, like around 20, 25 people, I guess, if you count all the contractors. We run all kinds of media buying. So media buying is a term that's used to basically buy ads on various platforms, right? YouTube is one of them for sure. We do Facebook as well, Instagram, and all these other ones. Why am I here? So I'm a serial entrepreneur. This is not my first business venture. I used to have a health clinic with my ex-wife that went with the ex-wife. And then I had a consulting practice and another agency before this business. So I was always kind of playing in the arena of quote unquote small business. So business like under 2 million per year. And we are kind of getting into an area where we're becoming bigger in our agency. And I'm kind of realizing my limits as a leader. Should I mention like a specific problem that I was thinking of?
Yeah. The more specific you can be, the better.
Yeah. So media buying is a very data heavy driven business, right? So it's all about data and accuracy of data, more specifically, right? So I'm having this recurring issue with various levels of employees, right? It can be anybody from just like a regular person who makes reports, for example, to a manager, to a really important person in the company, like, you know, like a person who manages the whole department, right? And the thing that I'm kind of realizing is that, so we try to do a good job of hiring the right people, right? So right people from the point of view of cultural fit, from the point of view of, you know, attention to detail. But what I'm noticing is when people start working for us at first, right? So let's say you hired somebody who is excellent at detail. So the reason why I'm talking about detail, because attention to detail is like a primary thing that's really important for our type of business, right? Because if you don't pay attention to detail, the whole media buying portion of this, it's not a creative business so much as data-driven business, right? And attention to detail in data is the key to success, literally. So what I'm noticing is that when I hire them at first, they pay a lot of attention and do a really good job. But over time, they almost get comfortable. And that comfort starts dropping the quality level. So I'm forced to kind of go back and micromanage them, even though I know that they're capable of managing themselves, right? So it's kind of like, it's a reoccurring thing where at first they're really good and they're doing great, but then over time, you know, I don't know, they have like personal issues or something that happens in their life that sways their focus away from the ball, and the result is a drop in quality. And people keep telling me about these automated agencies. So automate everything. That's like a buzzword right now in the industry. But I don't see how I can do it, right? Like, unless I solve this problem, it's not going to be automated, nothing. I'm going to have to literally be the micromanager, which I don't want to be. Obviously, I want to empower people to do things, right? So that's kind of my thing.
Okay. Awesome. So have you talked to others in your industry? And is this I'll give you an example, like in an industry of, we'll call it bin picking, people who put things from one bin to another, right? There is just an industry standard that the turnover is X and the injury rate is X. And they all kind of know the benchmarks. And they're like, this is just the cost of doing business. We don't expect the highest levels of employee engagement, and we just kind of count it as part of the cost. So a question I'd have for you is, do you have a sense for what the benchmark is in the industry for this kind of behavior? Like, do you, or is this recent for you? Like, how long you've been running this business?
Almost 5 years.
And has it been this way for 5 years? Or is it recent?
Well, okay. So in the first 3 years, I wasn't, like the system, because so what happened was that I joined my business partners. I was last to come on board, like as part of the management team, right? And my role at first wasn't overseeing everything. It was like a very specific department, sales specifically, right? And then a little bit of operations. So I wasn't noticing it as much, right? Okay. In the last year, I took over everything, right? So I oversee everything. So I oversee sales, I oversee operations, literally everything. We had some change in management. One of my business partners left, so we had to kind of rejuggle. And to answer your question, no, I don't know the benchmark. So we paid this guy, Dev. So he runs Powered by Search. It's a like $800,000 a month agency, right? So really successful, right? So we paid him to consult with us one-on-one. And so his solution is more related to systems, right? So you make very, very rigid systems, checklists that they have to complete, right? And then when they fail to complete that checklist is, you know, like that's the indication that you need to do something about them. Then you performance manage them. So I've tried that. And the morale went, ooh. right? So I'm like, well, that's not the right solution because it creates too rigid of an environment. So now I'm on a kick where I'm more empowering each department to do their own thing, but I'm overseeing it, right? So if I do see mistakes, we kind of have like almost touch points every week, right? Where we talk about kind of like things that I see, right? So I am the final checkpoint. The problem is it's not a good long-term solution, right? Like it's working right now. I'm able to sustain it, but it's a terrible solution long-term because all I'm creating is more work for myself over and over again, right?
Okay. So just a couple of things. I mean, I think the first question is, of course, you know, is this innate to this business and these roles? And it's something that has to be dealt with. I would agree with you if you had come to me and said, I'm thinking about instituting a really rigid system. I would tell you there's a very specific way to institute that. And it uses a very specific change management process. And it also comes with all kinds of rewards, meaning you would create a reward system attached to it. But if you just go, hey, here's this new Iron Maiden that you need to fit your head into, they're going to be like, what? No, I don't want to do that. So there has to be some reason that they would want to do that. So that's the one thing I would just say there. The other thing I want to highlight for you, just this is just kind of management 101 for everybody on the call who's listening. I want you to, you can go to module 3, and in module 3, kind of, I can't remember exactly which video, but let me see. I might have the videos up here. Where am I? That's module 2. I'll just share my screen really quick and show, and I'll talk you through a little bit of it too, but it's, I'll show you the reference point for it if you need to go back and review anything. All right. Let me share my screen here. So module 3, when you get down to video 8, is diagnosing performance issues. And there's also, I would say, start with video 7. So I call this the Arise model, and there's a little worksheet workbook thing you can download here as kind of a cheat sheet just to help you start thinking through it a little bit differently. So 5 reasons people don't perform. The first one is awareness. Have you made them truly aware of what you expect of them? So that's the first question. And there's about 6 different steps of that, right? There's not just are they aware, but do they know what the priority is? Do they understand the sequencing? Do they understand what winning looks like? Do they have you verified that they share your same understanding? And there's a whole set of techniques to having those conversations that you can actually confirm or verify whether or not people get what it is you're doing. So that's really this video is all about how you as a manager have a responsibility for making sure you are giving crystal clear communication to your team. Because ultimately, that's the thing that bleeds organizations is lack of clarity. Clarity is just lifeblood to an organization. So that module is all about how do you create clarity for people in performance? And then what you do is you go to the remaining 4, which are RISE. First one is resourcing. You know, are they properly resourced? Do they have the right bandwidth? Have you stretched them beyond where they should be? Do they have the right budget? Are there political issues that are going on or role descriptions that are overlapping and therefore creating confusion? That's resourcing. 2 is, are they inexperienced? Do they just not have an experience in some way? And I know, Alex, not every one of these is relevant for what you're talking about, but I'm wanting you to be aware of it because it's going to apply in any context that you have somebody who isn't performing the way you want them to. So that's inexperience. S is skill. I'm sorry, did I say inexperienced? Anyway, I is inexperienced. That's really just, have they seen enough cycles of something to be able to benchmark whether or not they're effective at it? Do they know what they don't know? That's an important one. S is skill. Do they have a missing skill? And then the last one is E, and that's engagement. Are they just not excited? Is it really, really boring and repetitive? Is it, did they just go through a divorce? Did somebody die? Did they get an illness? That's engagement. All of those that can influence how people perform. And so that's just a really good tool for you to start playing with and assessing in your organization who's performing at the level I want them to and who's not. And if they're not, how do I, first of all, diagnose which it is, then how do I design the right intervention for it? And how do I have that conversation? Those videos will tell you exactly how to do that. So the thing that I would say for any kind of a job that is low skill and high repetition, engagement is going to be the first thing that goes. And once engagement goes, performance goes. And so it is either, there are lots of different ways to solve for this, and you'd have to decide which one you want to engage in. So a great example of it would be like, you know, when there's a life or death situation, like air traffic controllers, they have all kinds of systems in place to ensure that they exit a task before they drop an engagement or fatigue or anything at all, to ensure that a fresh set of eyes gets in on there, because people could die if they don't, right? So that's when you take it much more seriously. That's an extreme. For you, you might just ask the question, is there some way to cycle work through different kinds of people so that one person isn't always stuck having to do the exact same thing over and over again? So that's one possibility. Another possibility, this one's a little more long-term. You build into your organization values, right? Does your company have values, stated values?
No.
Okay. So, I mean, this is a big one.
They're quote unquote unstated. We are kind of, so my business, it's like a house on fire that needs to be constantly put up every day. So we are very much in the survival mode right now. We kind of reached a pretty good spot like 2 years ago, and then it fell apart again. And then it's kind of, our industry is very interesting, because I have a reoccurring problem where I can't get people good results 100% of the time, because it doesn't depend on me. Like, I can do a perfect job, perfect job. I did everything I was supposed to, checked all the marks, but
and it my doesn't work.
Customer doesn't get the result that they want,
yep,
simply because it could be the offer that we're promoting, something doesn't work with the marketing funnel. There's many variables, and that leads to a very big attrition rate, right?
Yep.
Which creates instability in my business. So right now, I'm focusing on developing a core set of business services that can increase the deliverability success, if you would, and stabilize the cash flow, right? So that's my first priority. And after that, I definitely want to do this, because I started watching your videos, right? And it makes total sense to do that. But that's the step. But
it's not, I get it. It's higher up on Maslow's hierarchy. So what I'm suggesting here is maybe a smaller iteration of it. So for example, it could be that you issue rewards of some kind. It doesn't have to be monetary. You issue a reward for an error-free week. You know, it's sort of like when you're in an industry that has high accidents, and you have that, we have this many days without an accident, you're kind of celebrating and acknowledging the things that people are getting. And so you don't have to, you could give them a $25 gift card every time they have a week without an error. Maybe you don't do that. Maybe it's, you know, you need a little bit more of a system in place to do this, but it would be like, every week there's a meeting and you acknowledge and recognize somebody's performance and you celebrate it, and they get, you know, a gold star or a little artifact of some kind. And at the end, if you get five of these artifacts, whatever they are, then you get a $25 gift card or something. So you create value in an artifact that wouldn't otherwise have value. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you want to be realistic about it, because humans are humans and they're going to make mistakes. So you just want to play with like, what is the right tolerance level there? So I would say there's so many ways we could go with this, but for now, here are the three suggestions I have. One, try to figure out which of the five reasons they're not performing is really going on. Have a conversation with people if you're seeing repeated mistakes, and I'll teach you how to have that conversation. Two, I want you to think about, are there ways to cycle behaviors that just require a lot of focus and fatigue? people just sort of lose their like, oh gosh, okay, I can't, no human can do that, right? And then three is
suggestion. I actually heard about it on a podcast just recently. Somebody was talking about something and it really resonated with me, and you reminded me of this again. So I think that's a phenomenal idea.
And one of the things that cycling does is it flags for them. You say it clearly, like, this is such a critical part of our business that we want to make sure we're not having any mistakes. So if there's any hint of fatigue or any kind of exhaustion or boredom, I need you to tag out. And then this is the person you're going to tag in. And you shouldn't go beyond this many minutes or hours or whatever in that kind of work. And you kind of create little things. What that does to them is it alerts them, you care about me. You care enough about my limits as a human that I want to be even more attentive now. And I want to be more aware of my own engagement level. Does anybody else have any feedback for Alex on this issue of having workers needing to attend to detail? Anybody else have experience? All right. Sounds like they perfected that issue, Alex. I'm just kidding.
I don't have anything extra to add.
Okay, good. You're mostly just agreeing. Yeah, but and I see here, David, you're saying yes. yes, what does that mean?
He's saying he perfected it.
Oh. Yeah. David is a surgeon.
Yeah. See, surgeons would have similar issues. If they tune out, people die. That's very much the same.
Good. Okay. Well, let's, Alex, good enough for now. I'm happy to come back to you in a little bit. Let me just run around the horn here. And I think if you want to stick around and kind of see what's going on, you may find value in what other people are asking about. Okay. So who would like to go next? Who has another question?
I'll join the fray.
All right.
So tacking on the previous conversation, we also have a process or processes that require a lot of steps. And I'm constantly looking for opportunities to streamline it. And we wound up having a checklist system, which seems to help it as long as you use it. But there's always the temptation, you got a lot of work and, you know, why do I need to check this box and this box? But the, the downstream effects of getting casual with that is it can create extra work and frustration. So I don't think we've, cracked the code on that one, but that's where we've wound up at this point. And that's all that information about Arise is really, really, really useful. So I'm going to have to dig into that module.
And one thing I just want to highlight, sorry, you've mentioned something here that's important, Ed. And Alex, this applies to you and what you were asking about. I just want to highlight again, in the first couple of videos of the training, we talk about all people who come to work for you have three jobs. And they had two jobs long before they ever got hired by you. And the job you hired them for is their third job. So the first job is to enjoy and fulfill their own life. They got that when they were born. Their second job is to learn and grow. And the third job is to perform, which is to support you. And so what very often happens in businesses is we forget these two jobs and we end up just focusing on the third job. And the reason that's so important is the moment people stop feeling a connection or enjoyment, the moment they feel they've stopped learning, their performance will start to tank. And I can't think of a better way to dehumanize an experience than create checklists. You know, like, I mean, how many of you just think I'm going to go on vacation and I just want to have checklists that I get to go through? You know, like maybe some people get a lot of satisfaction out of it. I think most people find when you reduce life to checklists, it gets really hard. Now, I think what I'm trying to say about that is each industry, each context, each situation requires a little bit of creative thinking around what are the ways that I can turn this into learning for them? Or what are the ways that I can connect it to something else? So a great example was an AT&T call center. They were having a hard time keeping employees because back, this is like a story from the 90s or whatever, and one of my mentors and coaches trained me in this. But what he did is he was hired to go into AT&T to figure out how to recover a call center because they were just, attrition was so high because they're taking complaint calls all the time. And so what he did is he just taught them using the three jobs idea. He just taught them a simple technique, did an experiment where they were told, you know, the way that they were managed at that time was they had a green light, a yellow light, and a red light. And their job was to get on and off the call before the red light went off. So their stress level was really high because someone's complaining at them and their boss is telling them, get off the phone, get off the phone. And they're like, okay, but I gotta do this thing. And so nobody wanted to do it. And AT&T complaint rates were really high. So my friend came in, took a group and he removed the three lights. And he said, there's no time limit anymore. Your goal is not to achieve a time. We're gonna do this as an experiment for 3 months and just see what happens. So that was the first thing he did is he removed that stress. The second thing he did is he tried to create interest in the listener. So he trained them and said, your goal is to try to detect and write down the dominant emotion of the person that is calling you. So if it's anger, write anger. If it's frustration, it's frustration. If it's fear, it's fear. Try to see if you can hear the emotion. And second, I want you to write down how intense is that emotion on a scale of 1 to 10. Outright murderous rage is a 10. Very, very mild annoyance is a 1. And your job is to get really good at detecting the right emotion and detecting the right intensity. Don't worry about the time. And after 3 months, what they found was engagement was way higher than it had ever been. Complaints went way down. And the reason is because the workers, when they interviewed them afterwards, they felt like, well, I felt like I was learning something. I felt like I was learning a skill that was like how to detect and understand and intuit what people need. Even though that's not what they were hired for, they wanted to learn that because they understood that second job. It was also more enjoyable because they weren't faced with the kind of red light, you know, going off and them getting dinged in their pay or whatever it was that, you know, there was some negative consequence. Right. And so, so that's a technique that is used. It doesn't go forever. Sometimes you have to make adjustments, but the point is that you want to start thinking in those more creative terms that are around what in this technique that is repetitive and rote, how do I get them to either have learning or maybe I'm a bus driver. What would it mean to create a value system that shows that what you're doing is contributing to the world in a really meaningful way? And this heavy thing that you carry with you every day is contributing greater meaning and greater purpose to so many people in the world. And so Luck Companies, which is one of these aggregates businesses, they have about 800 employees. And about 90% of them are blue collar workers with hard hats working in quarries. And they take big rocks and they make small rocks. That's what they do for a living. They're Fred Flintstone. So I can't think of a less interesting job than that. Their employees have, they score in the top 1% of the most engaged employees in the world against all of the best companies in the world in the top 1%. And the reason is because they have a very, very robust values, vision, and reward system that connects them to meaning. So like one of their purposes, the company's business is about aggregates, but their purpose is igniting human potential. So they see that their role in the lives of these employees is to help awaken their potential, which is an extraordinarily strange thing to think about when you just need blue collar people to take big rocks and make small rocks. But as a result, they're like Southwest Airlines. They're approached all over the world. I've also been trained by them to do this work. So anyway, I'm just giving you guys lots of different ideas to start playing and thinking a little differently about the humanity of the people that you hire and work with. Because when you connect to that humanity, when you connect to that sense of purpose, when you understand and respect the power of fear and anxiety are terrible motivators for most people's performance, you get a different kind of result. So comments, questions, pushback about that, anybody's welcome to weigh in here. This isn't just for any one of you. It's just an overall kind of way to understand things. And if people are really excited to be working with you, you don't have to worry about this stuff. This is really more if you feel like I'm leading something that people don't enjoy. It's hard. It's tedious. It's repetitive. Or it's just too easy. It's so easy. It's boring, but it has to be done.
So what my takeaway is to look for opportunities to create a work environment where people can maybe learn or be engaged, get meaning out of the work, make sure that's present. And there still is, and maybe I'm a recovering perfectionist and I want to have it done this way and have these little pieces in. So do you recommend abandoning a checklist per se, or just make sure that there's this kind of engagement, level of engagement and creativity possible?
I think before you would abandon anything, you start with a posture of curiosity. You just want to get curious about, hey, what's this like? What does it feel like to do this work? You know, that when we talk about the emotional system, which governs 80% of behavior and performance, the emotional system is defined as how I feel about the work I'm doing and how I feel about the people I work with and for. So you want to get curious about, what's it feel like to do this job? You know, I've got an appointment setter in my business and we get 700 leads a month, thanks to Alex. And that appointment setter gets on a power dialer and calls every single one of those leads. And you can imagine very few of them are excited to hear from him. You know, they're like, I signed up for what? I don't even remember that thing. Who are you? I'm busy. Why are you calling me? So he has to deal with, it's not a cold call because most of them know who I am, but they're also like, why are you calling me? There's suspicion. So I have to work with him around his own discouragement, his own feeling like I'm not good at this. And how do I help him? Well, the way that I help him is I have certain conversations in certain ways. I'm regularly celebrating him. I'm listening to his calls, telling him what a great job he did here, inviting him to change that, asking him to think about what are you learning in this experience? You know, forget about me and my job and how you're performing for my company. What are you, Paul, learning in this experience? What part of this job is most heavy for you? What part of the job scares you the most? What part of the job overwhelms you the most? And then I may not be able to fix it, but sometimes just listening to it, just hearing someone talk about, I hate this part of that job, and just going, I totally get that. And I would hate that if I were in your shoes too. And I wish there was a way to change it, and I can't, but I want you to know that I see that. And I'm not going to stop looking for ways to change it if I can't. So if there are new technologies or new approaches and any ideas you have, I want you to bring them to me. But in the meantime, let's keep at it and know that I'm thinking about this and I'm concerned about it for you. That one conversation buys me another 5 hours of discretionary effort by that employee.
May I add something?
Yeah.
So just to kind of like talk to Ed's point here about checklists. So we did such an extensive checklist system before. It was crazy. Exactly like what Shane said, Iron Maiden, right? Like they had no wiggle room whatsoever. So what I did that worked, right? It didn't solve my attention to detail issue, but it most certainly solved the morale issue, right? Is I have a series of huddles, right? So I switched the checklist to huddles. So for example, you know, we work remote, the whole company is remote. So nobody sees each other, right? They're all over the world, very impersonal experience. Every morning we have a huddle It's only for 10 minutes. It's not, doesn't take your whole thing, but literally just a small ritual where it humanizes the thing, right? So, you know, we'd say personal win, business win, and what we're going to do today, right? That small ritual is huge. Like everybody shows up for that thing, right? Because it's just a way to connect, right? But I also do business huddles as well. So for example, once a week with my media buying team, one of the things that I need to know is I need to know that they did everything they were supposed to, like a checklist. I could get them to complete a checklist, but instead I switched it to a meeting once a week where we go over all the accounts and I'm going to just ask them what happened. And that personal one, well, it's like a team, like a huddle, right? Like it's a group of a small group of people interaction, changed it upside down because they do much better job than they used to. I have more oversight and it's not to the point where it's like completely prohibitive in terms of time investment, right? Anyways, I don't know if that's helpful or not, but that worked for me in terms of switching from that checklist to.
Very helpful. And I've done it not as a explicit routine as you have. And I think I will actually.
So one of the things speaking to that, that Alex, thanks for bringing that up, that is a cultural ritual. And this is the way that you build culture and instill vision and values in a company is rituals, tools, and processes. So rituals are repeating events. Processes are like onboarding, hiring, firing, performance management. And tools are like a values video or a poster or an artifact of some kind that somebody gets, like a card that recognizes them. And with the values listed, that's an example. You know, the other thing that I might suggest you add, if you can, is to think through this, and this goes for you too, Alex, is you can shift some of that huddle. The first part of any weekly meeting can be about recognition. Mm-hmm. And the way that you, what you're recognizing are the behaviors you want to see more of. And so what you'd say is, you know, hey, going forward for the next 8 weeks, our focus as a company is going to be on attention to detail. It's our lifeblood. Now, you might think about reframing attention to detail to something more interesting than that. You might call it like the Hawkeye Award, you know, like somebody who has the eye of a hawk, or literally the Marvel guy who has the ability to like shoot an arrow off the tiniest, you know, fly from a mile away, right? That's kind of like a more fun, interesting way to talk about attention to detail. And everybody gets, you know, if you get a Hawkeye Award, it's because you achieved this level of lack of mistake or however you want to put it. But you're each week you're going, hey, I want to recognize these three people. Or you can do it where others recognize each other. That's even more powerful. So you would warn them, you'd say, today I'm going to do the recognitions. Next week, I want you guys to have your eyes peeled for people you've been working with in the company that have really been showing up and doing a great job of whatever it is, data analytics or assessing. And so we're just going to take 3 minutes, want everybody to go around. And then if you're all remote, there are other ways to do this, but you might send them an email with a Hawkeye, you know, GIF. And if you collect 5 of these GIFs, you get a $50 gift card to Amazon. And that takes like 2 minutes at the beginning of every meeting for every week. If you create a system like that, you will get whatever you reward. You absolutely will get whatever you reward.
That's actually a great suggestion. I really like that. I really like that. I need to do more recognition. I kind of started doing it, but not the way you're saying it. So I think I'm...
And I would say like just so you know, what happens that's really interesting is we did this in lots of different contexts, but like in an in-person setting, we literally just had cards with all 4 values of that company. And what we had them do was we said, okay, handed out a card to everybody and you go pick one person in this room, circle the value, write their name and the thing you appreciated, take a minute and do that. Now, everybody goes around and goes, who's getting recognized? And they go, I want to recognize Joe because he did X, Y, and Z and he lived out this value. Done. Give that card to Joe. And then you go around. Well, like 1 week, one person got 10 cards because there was a huge project he pulled off. He got 10 cards. these are senior executives who make $350,000 a year. They're posting their recognition cards on their walls. And then we take all those cards down, we put them in a drawing, and they get a $50 gift card, and then they ask for the cards back. They don't want to lose. So they have now currency, real value, no different than a colonel with stars or stripes. You know, it's like, are those worth anything? Yeah, they're worth a lot in that context. So, you know, those little Hawkeye gifts, however many you can collect, or if you can even thingify it, even better. You know, if there's a way to thingify something, that's awesome. That's
it's really also, it's also in a weird way, like a 360 degree review that happens automatically, right? Because it's other people reviewing you and they're encouraging a positive thing. So I really like that idea.
And so, Alex, the other thing I'm going to suggest you review, because this will have a big impact on performance management and accountability and things like that, is module 4. You know, so I've given you video 7 and 8 of module 3. And those are not long, and you can watch them at double speed, or you can download the workbook, and it's fine too. You know, my interest is to get you through this as fast as possible, not to have you luxuriate. Hang on, let me just see if I can get this up and running. I got to find the exact video, but it's basically the core of what I teach around building culture and performance management is weekly tactical meetings. So the principles of a weekly tactical meeting, how to run them, how to actually do them, is game changer. It boosts engagement. It creates way more efficiency. Meetings happen faster, and you get built-in accountability as a part of the meeting protocol. And so there may be some things you're doing that already work and you don't need to change them. You may want to edit a few things and try some different things. I recommend you try it as an experiment always. And you tell people that, hey, we're trying an experiment. I want to see how this works. We're going to do it for 4 weeks. And make sure there are certain things in there that are really critical. And the most critical one is, at the end, there's a 5 minutes reserve for what's called a like best next time or a Delta Plus, which is just, hey, how did this meeting go? What did you like best? What would you like to see different? And you will begin to iterate like you do your ad campaigns. You begin to iterate your meetings to be just super dialed in. So video 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Of module 4. Those have been just truly game changer for leaders that I work with. They just end up feeling things are lighter, things are working better. All right. Hopefully that was serving everybody. Ed, is this useful to what you were asking? Okay.
Sure was. Thank you.
I do want to check in with David, because I know, David, you were on the eve of of doing that 360. So wanted to check
in. Yeah, and I've had a few interviews of our staff. Some of the interviews kind of got put on hold because I had a staff member's family passed away, and so they were out. But you know, I've gotten good positive feedback so far amongst everybody. So I think it's going to reinforce the challenge that. There probably isn't as much of a problem as people were complaining about. I think a lot of people introspectively, as they were critiquing Susan or whatever, really, you know, people that I thought that were complaining about her micromanaging never brought that up. And I tried to dig it out of them without accusing them. Well, I heard you said this. So I don't know if I'm inept at being able to ask the right questions to get it out of them, but I kind of kept saying, you know, so what else does she do? What does she not do? And what's good about what she does? And generally speaking, though, so far I've kind of gotten just very good compliments, but no meat to say, well, I heard through the grapevine that you were dissatisfied. And so that's kind of where I am. But again, I have 6 more people to go through before I'm complete. So we'll see how that goes.
It is very, very possible that you, as the business owner doing these interviews, will limit your ability to get to good data, especially if you're, you know, they just don't feel confident. A question I recommend you ask anyway at the end of each of those interviews, and it's okay if you don't get perfect data, no big deal. You're doing something that's an important part of emotional process. You're giving people the chance to feel heard, even if they aren't saying the truth. That will actually impact them in a very positive way. The last question that I would say you should ask them that I realized I should have said is, ask them, how can I be a better leader for you? So I've just been talking about Susan, but how can I be a better leader for you?
Yeah, okay. That'd you know, kind of question. Along the lines of what you were saying earlier, we had an office of 8 people, so there's not a whole lot of different people in the office, but bringing up, oh, so-and-so did a great job, a round of applause for them. And, you know, whether it's how they answered the phone or, you know, we had a patient who called and said, oh, you know, Vicky did such a wonderful job with me on the phone and let her know. And so we would kind of share this information. And in a way, I'm not sure if I was able to cultivate the positives out of that because it kind of spiraled down to Vicky's the only one in the office that does a great job on everything. And I kind of had other people that were kind of felt displaced or felt grumbly because she's getting all the positive attention. And even though it's like, well, you know, patients would call and say, great job, Vicky. Other staff, she was kind of, won the award for being efficient, won the award. But then I found out, you know, she's the only one winning an award. And how do I get other people engaged to say, you know what, okay, Vicky's won this. So for the next month, anybody but Vicky can get the award. And I almost kind of, the feedback I kind of got was that, well, maybe you're kind of diluting the value of the award if you're eliminating the star player, but you know, I kind of want other people to be recognized too. And so ultimately, we kind of let it fall to the side and I forgot about it because it just, I wasn't building, the ship didn't, or the water didn't raise all ships. It only seemed to raise her ship and she continued to do an excellent job. And actually she excelled further because of the accolades where I had other people, they just kind of looked at it and felt like, I don't know if they felt like I can't compete with this or I can't contribute. And maybe it was demoralizing to see that this other person kept getting all the awards.
Yeah. So first of all, I would definitely not say you're not allowed to get the award anymore. Like they can get the award as many times as they can. That's great. What you can do is start to add more awards. And the way you would do that is if there are certain kinds of behaviors that you want to incentivize, you would effectively say, okay, there are 4 different things that I care about. One is the one that Vicky's winning constantly, which is fine. And she can keep winning it, and others are welcome to compete for it. And if you see somebody get it, great. But you can create these awards that have nothing to do with, that are softer, that give you the latitude to choose it. So for example, when I was referring to the recognition awards, right? Like we recognize you for living out this value. There was a period of time when our company at that time, the company was way too creative and they needed way more rigor and they needed way more accountability. And they were all out there in like relationship land and creativity land. And that's what made them so successful. But now they had scaled so much, it was falling apart and they needed a lot more rigor. And so we just would start acknowledging like, hey, one of our values is accountability. For the next 4 weeks, we're going to be only looking at accountability. Let's talk about, that. And so each week we'd reward somebody, different person, and we'd see the smallest thing we could find and shine light there. And then that would bloom them. They would blossom. And that's the thing is that when you start to give people small tastes, even if it's like, hey, that was a really good job. Thanks for taking out the trash. You get an award. They're like, oh, taking out the trash gets me an award. I should do more like that. And they start to do even more. And then it's really great when you switch it up, when instead of Vicky winning the award, you give it to somebody else because they did something amazing. Now, Vicky might've done it at an A+ level. This person did it at a B, but they were at a C. And you acknowledge that. You go, look, you went from a B to a C. That's awesome. You don't say that, but like you would celebrate it as, hey, you really showed up in a way that I hadn't seen you show up before. You get the award that Vicky's always getting. It's yours now. So that's just a suggestion that I have is that don't get too locked into the rigidity of the system. The system is there to serve the people. People are not there to serve a system. So you will adapt the system however you need to in order to create the emotional system's movement and momentum. And that's how you would work that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Any logistical concerns with what I just said in your system, or does it, you feel like it's pretty easy to translate that?
I think we can definitely make the transition.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Reese, Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Swamped again, but pretty good. I've been missing, I think I've missed a lot of the last two sessions, except for last week, because luckily, that was supposed to be my last week. Luckily, luckily for me, not for everyone.
Well, how are you doing? What's the latest?
Well, you know, things are going. We're about to. We got our lease. We're ready to get into the office and get our people back in there. But I think, well, we're all friends here. It's not being told to me directly, but I think we're having some cash flow issues with ownership. So that's a problem I can't control. So I can't do anything about that. But the discussion about incentives has really hit home, because I was planning on doing that as part of my 90-day action plan when I took over this role. And it's just fire after fire. So I've written it down again that I got to establish that. I've gotten things. We've gotten things under control, I think. The burnout factor is going away, but that just means adding more staff on our end. So the cost to the company has not gone down yet. It will. But I'm not saying that because that added to the cash flow issue. That has nothing to do with it. My problem now is, as we transition our operations from our nearshore area to our offshore, since we're opening this office, I'm seeing morale kind of decrease in our nearshore operations just because they see the writing on the wall. You know, you kind of try to be honest with them without being so direct, but we are moving a lot of positions overseas. And I think the rank and file has gotten wind of that. And, you know, I'm not seeing it personally because I'm not there every day. But the feedback I'm getting from my leadership team is that it's affecting productivity and morale. So I'm kind of at my, I need help how to manage that thing without lying to them. I don't want to say, no, we're not taking jobs away, because sadly, we kind of are. We're backfilling positions over there instead of adding positions over in our nearshore office.
Okay. So let me just make sure I understand a few things. These are low-skill workers?
Yeah, data entry. Typical data entry, data processing, nothing IT or anything like that. But yeah, pretty much you're entering information into a data capture screen.
Okay. And the reason I'm asking is because there is a philosophy, a management philosophy, may or may not work in your context. So that's why I need to understand some more. There is a management philosophy that says, actually, the more honest you are with people, the more likely they are to give you what you need. And there is a kind of historic mistrust between management and workers always. Yes. And the reason is because workers generally feel like, you do not have my best interest in mind, you have your best interest in mind. Sure. And so I need to do whatever I can to get away with what I need to get away with. And in my experience, and I'm not saying that I know this in every situation, there are some situations where it doesn't really work as well. But I have definitely seen in my experience where when we just give people a lot more of a heads up and a lot more information and a lot more choice, and then we ask for help, we often got so much better results. So, you know, there have been a number of companies that I have helped lead through this kind of a change. And in one of them, we literally opened all the books to show them. I mean, we were smart about how we did it, because it's not about hiding information, but it's about helping them understand, if you don't have context, this information may be scary. So we had to be very smart about, hey, here's the benchmark. Here's where we are. Here's the gap. Here's what that gap means. Here's how long we have. We want you to be prepared. We want you to be involved in your own choices. And we want you to help us. And here's what would help us if you could do X, Y, and Z in exchange for that. If you end up losing your job, here's what we will do for you. We understand if you want to look at us and say, you're crazy, I want to get out of here, I'm going to brush off my resume, we respect that. And we're going to work with you no matter what. And there was this incredible response, which was, thank you so much for treating me like a human, for actually respecting me as an adult, for letting me engage in choices that work for me, not just for you. And many people stuck around that we didn't think would. And the reason they did is because of the way we did it. And their work product went up, not down. Now, again, that was not a low skill environment. That was a high skill environment. It wasn't necessarily high pay, but it was a higher skill environment. It was real estate, property management, things like that. Yeah. And, you know, some people left. They brushed off their resumes and we were fine with that. We accepted that. What we had asked them for was, will you help, you know, transition certain things if you are leaving? And it was just a totally different environment where we started to have far more honest conversations and let everybody be humans. And yeah, there is some financial impact sometimes, but that is the risk. But we had the exact opposite experience. So I say that to you, not because I think it's the right answer for your context, because I really don't know enough about your context to say that for sure. Yeah. But I think it would be really interesting for you to do your own thought experiment around what would it mean to start speaking to people and imagining a scenario where you manage some risk, but you are more honest with them.
Yeah.
And why I say that is I think at this time where there's a lot of like fear of recession, what happens is workers become a lot less choosy. They become a lot more willing to kind of support an organization if they think they have a shot at sticking around. And so, you know, you'd want to be really honest. So like one of the things we would do is if we knew certain roles were going, we just told them right away. We're like, you're gone in 3 months. It's going to happen in 3 months. Okay. And we want you to stick around as much as you can. We understand if you don't want to, but you know that's what's happening and the role isn't being replaced. And so you can start looking for a job and you can stay in the payroll for this amount of time. Here are the bare minimum things we need from you during this time. And we just got amazing results from that. People were so appreciative of the runway. And in some cases, anyway, I'll just pause there. How does that land for you as I say all that?
Actually, we have, I have been open to my direct reports, you know, the people that actually I see and talk to every day, and just gave them some metrics on why that decision is being made or was made, you know, just a quality of work. Cost is the biggest, you know, we're going to save approximately 50% from labor cost with people producing the same number of work with a less number of hours. So it's the place where we're at right now, their weekly work week is 48 hours. The people in Manila that we're doing are not producing the same results in about 40. So you're getting cheaper labor at a more efficient cost. So, and they understood this is our leadership team. So they understood that they all, of course, they also know that they're not going to be directly affected in anytime soon, just because the transition, this is going to take a little bit and we need their expertise. So I think we're going to talk to people that report to them and try and explain that why it's happening. And as you said, give them a heads up. And I think I was a victim of a buyout a while back as well. And the management was honest with me. So it gave me time to prepare, you know, after the shock, right? I was a lot younger then. So gave me time to prepare and kind of showing up my skills and got out there. So that helped. So yeah, I can see that viewpoint for sure. But as you said, these are not manual labor or factory labor type work. They're office based work. So it's not.
You might just strategize with your leadership team if there is a way to responsibly share that or some of it, or to prepare them. It's just an experiment, and you may conclude it's not the right decision. That's fine. But yeah. I think it's well worth a conversation to think through what would it mean to treat these people with dignity and choice, and not simply use them as they, you know, go out the door.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's candidly, I think it's, for lack of a better word, bad business karma.
Yes.
It's understandable. I'm not saying it's the wrong decision to outsource. I understand that. It makes sense. But how you do that, it does have consequences for the organization. Correct. So anyway, that'd be something for me to just encourage you to reflect on a little bit. And Reese, this, you know, we can talk too, if you want to continue on, there are ways to continue on these coaching calls. I'd love to have you. I know we have a call scheduled, I think next week. So we'll look forward to chatting about that. So hopefully this is not goodbye.
Hopefully.
And we'll keep working with you.
All right.
Good. Good enough for now, Reese.
Yes, sir. Always.
Okay, great. John Mark, how are you, sir? Are you there?
Yeah, Shane, I'm here. It's been also a pretty crazy, hectic time, but I'm still around.
So, thank you.
Yeah, I thought that was really very good questions and really good strategy. So thanks, Reese, for bringing that up. You know, my situation is maybe as complicated, and maybe it takes a little bit of background. So Shane, if the team could just bear with me, because you need to understand a little bit of the structure of the corporation I work for, which is, it's called the Saskatchewan Health Authority, which is the biggest single employer in the province of Saskatchewan. We're not government, but we are basically the healthcare operations and arm of government, so to speak. So part of the problem, and my little shop is public health. And, you know, public health should be familiar to all of us because these are the pandemic guys. And, you know, how government and politics infused a lot of pandemic kind of strategy and work. So the problem that I'm having at the moment, I think the last time I met with all of us, I did flag that we're in a lot of rebuilding, restarting, restructuring some of the old continuing work that the group that I work for, where I would estimate we're at least somewhere in the range between 1,000 to 2,000 people, multi-discipline of nurses. But my job is a smaller subset of co-leaders, many who are physician, technical expert leaders, and we also have administrative co-leaders, executive director level. So this is pretty high up in the organization. The next step up are our VPs and you know, physician leadership. So part of the problem that I've faced is as we go back to structuring and leading our operation work, I've seen a little bit of a dichotomy set in, where particularly my administrative co-leads, whom majority of the frontline staff report to, are quite happy to have operational only meetings. And it's really just restricted to our shop only. Whereas my job is an interface between high level strategy and policy from, you know, the minister's office, if we can say that. This is what they want. These are our accountabilities. And some of those things involve all citizens. It's not just, you know, the ones who show up at our door. It's really things that we try and serve everyone. So part of my problem that I'm actually trying to solve is in our committee formation, it's actually a structural problem. In our committees, how do we form a nice funnel and flow into operations without necessarily showing the government reach in hand, which gets everybody on their hackles? Although everybody knows, you know, my boss is, you know, let's just say the minister or the deputy minister, there's no questioning. If this is what they want, it's how do we get there? But my job is to do a little bit more modulating and translating and bringing the technical side to this. So in a real competition, I would say, particularly the administrative side versus the technical side, on how do we get the right multidisciplinary leadership committee that brings in this input work, is able to deal with the unanticipated, urgent, emergent risks that come up, and then flows into our operations in a way that is not overall disruptive. And I think it might have been helpful if I had a little bit of an organogram to show kind of these relationships. But this is truly what I feel my struggle in the last 2 weeks has been, is getting clarity, getting the right composition of strategic leadership, and then tactical leadership, and then operational leadership to actually lead the front line. So I'm sitting in this interface here where there's no coherence. And, you know, we've tried everything, OKRs and everything, you know, it just seems to be alien because we haven't built the right structure, I think. That's really what I've landed.
Do you have any authority to build that structure?
Well, partly. I have my immediate boss who this morning, I think, is busy in dialogue and modulating with the ministry. Because what we don't want in the end, because this is one quick solution, is the minister says, this is what it's going to be. And so it shall be. And that we want to avoid this because that kind of, we'll do the work, but everybody will be kind of alienated in that process. So I do have some, but not really the authority to change, but I do have influence in terms of how I shape this. And so Shane, to tell you what's actually happened, because there's so much competition, is there two parallel meetings building, and then some of us leaders kind of have to attend both to, you know, there's the administrative side and the technical side, which is kind of redundant and waste of time. I'm trying to bring both of those together. And maybe it's more of an ambassadorial kind of role, but that's a little bit of my management problem at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. So you're just so I understand, you have a lot of complexity and you have limited authority. You have some authority, but you have kind of a span of control that is lower than what you feel you would need in order to enact solutions.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing I would just suggest is, the right answer is going to be hard for me to give you because I'd have to spend months trying to understand the complexity of what you're dealing with. But there are a few things that I do understand about leading in highly complex situations. Mm-hmm. And one is the bonus module around managing up and across will be very useful for you to start to use, because what you're needing help with is not the what. I think you already know the what. You've rightly identified strategic, operational, and that's not what you said, tactical and operational. Yeah. So and in my mind, is just strategy and enactment. You know, how do you enact the thing that was thought about? So you sound like you've got that right and you've got the right sequencing there. What I'm interested in is the how. How do you then lead change through a system? And so the other video that I want to draw your attention to, which I think you've already seen, but I want to remind you and help you understand that it applies in this situation, is the Staging the Ascent video. I believe it's video 12 of module 1. And I want you to go back and review that also, because part of what you're talking about is, you know, you're talking about you need to have a series of conversations and you need to have a clear goal in mind about what each of those conversations is going to achieve. And you need to be realistic about that goal. And so that's those two things together, when applied properly, you will start to see results. And it'll take time. You know, you're in a big system and it's a complex system. So one of the things, you know, I don't know how many times you've been on a call when Jason Figley was on this call. He was last week or 2 weeks ago was his last call. Jason is a squadron commander in the U.S. Air Force, right? And boy, every time he came to me, he was just pulling his hair out. And what I had to keep reminding him was, you're in a role where you don't have a span of control to lead and enact the change you want. So one of the most important pieces you're going to have is patience. And here's what happens. It's a very simple equation. The more you feel you're responsible for something that you don't have control over, the more your stress goes up.
Yeah.
And so there you have a choice. You either reduce your feeling of responsibility, or you ask for and seek for ways to create more controls, greater span of control.
Yeah.
And I think right now you're in a spot where there isn't going to be a way to expand your span of control. You're just going to have to caucus. Yeah. And so I think those two little trainings will be helpful. And what I'd like for you to do is, if you can, watch those before our next call. And then I would love to just hear, how did those relate? Did they answer any of the questions? Did they provoke some thinking? And then we can get a little more specific and strategize about, okay, based on what you were seeing there, based on the context you're in, what conversation needs to happen next with whom? How does that conversation need to go? And that's what I can help you with. Does that sound good?
No, that sounds great. So I got the second one, the module 12, staging the ascent. What was the first one?
It's in the bonuses. It's under the bonuses tab, and it's the fifth bonus. It's called How to Manage Up and Across.
Okay. Yeah, that actually sounds like the recipe right there.
That is a big part of it. And it is a combination, really, managing up and across in concert with the stage and the ascent. Those two together are going to be very helpful.
Yeah, thanks, Shane. And certainly, I will keep all of us attuned because, yeah, hopefully, you know, we're able to untangle this one. But it is an interesting...
complex. You've got a tiger by a tail there, and you're dealing with vast complexity. And I love that kind of stuff. So, thank you. Okay, I have to go in about 5 minutes. I've got to hop on a plane, but I just want to check in. Thank you, John Mark, and everybody else. I just want to check in really quick with Linda and or Michelle. We've got 5 minutes. I just want to see how you guys are doing, anything you need, anything I can be helpful with before I hop off.
Hi, it's Linda. I'm just listening and enjoying what I'm listening to. So thank you.
Okay, good. Thank you. Michelle?
No, I'm good. Thanks for the reminder that I just have to keep my expectations lower and the things I don't have control over. So. Same stuff, different day.
I know. But it is hard. It's hard too if you're an eight. You know, if you're an eight on the Enneagram, That is one of the hardest lessons for eights to deal with, because they really are used to kind of knowing the right answers. So appreciate your patience, celebrating your patience.
Yeah, I'm learning. The hardest, I think, but the thing I'm still just learning is just the back channeling and the manipulating and it's just people. I'm gonna go back to them. Like, despite like my dogs.
Yeah. Dogs they do a lot less back-channeling and manipulating.
And I just get to a point where I get frustrated and I have to like work through my frustration, then I can go back to whatever. So I'm just in a very frustrated state. So anyways, that's all. But it's the same stuff, different day.
I get it. Well, as I said, you have my permission to be released from this role whenever you're ready.
I know. I think I have to hang out just a little bit longer, because unfortunately, you know how that all looks as you're in the industry. So just a little bit longer.
I do. I know. I understand.
All right.
Okay, good. Well, wishing you all the best, Michelle, and everybody else. Thank you for your time. I will look forward to talking to you all next week, and we'll go from there.
Safe travels.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.